This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Channel us a brand. Let's get him a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Let's get a rinky dink.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. But your mouth is strangled me.
That's a bit much. You murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious.
5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guest included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin banger.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Zero, coming to you live here on this crisp, cool Monday evening in Scott Criscola. We're in the throes of fall. The Halloween music has appeared, of course, since it is October. And, sir, how are you, my favorite jack-o'-lantern?
I am quite fine, man of the night. I am doing well. Welcome, JR. Welcome back from the Sunshine State, where it's very bright and not dark. Welcome, Place Me Nation, to episode 421 of the Mothership, baby, the Gulf Standard. And, it is getting crisp, finally.
You sound like you're in a basketball court tonight.
Well, we're actually, because this update on my computer is taking 7 hours, I'm on the Skype.
I think for Halloween you should go as a Skype update.
No, this isn't a Skype. This is a computer update. I should go
it's
on
any update. An update box. That's what you should go.
Yeah, on. I should go on like the Windows screen. I remember actually the last time I did a paper. We did a vault from when I was using my iPad. I remember it very vividly. It was SummerSlam 01 with Mr. Keith. Was the last time I used it. So it's quite a while. I didn't feel like waiting another hour. So JR. Live from the Bishop Hendricken gym. Speaking of, we should have made a bet, but we didn't. I hadn't thought of it till after the fact. But our high schools met. Our school's first game of the year. I'm assuming it was your first game of the year as well. I forgot your team nickname. What are you guys, the Greyhounds? No, that's your college. What's Hendricken's nickname?
Fight for the green, fight for the gold, mighty men of Hendricken, the Hawks.
The Hawks. I'm green and gold. We both have the same colors. Of course, the Green Knights. And yes, Hendricken won 26-21. So, in any event. Anyway, good to talk to you, JR, on this crisp Monday. But again, you were not in crisp weather. You looked like you were in very tepid weather.
Yeah, actually, I have a tan for like the first time in 8 years, I feel like. I haven't tanned well lately.
But normal tan, not like Vince WrestleMania 22 tan, where you look like a shoe.
On Wednesday, I was getting there, and then we tapered off our sun exposure. So I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they keep it up, but
I don't either. Without getting cancer, so
yeah, it was an uneventful. I come back from these vacations with something to rant on, but I've knock on wood, I've had some pretty good luck travel wise lately for both work and family. So I don't really have much to rant on. You know why? Because I've been flying JetBlue, and JetBlue is pretty good. Annoy me is these airports that have the shuttle to the rental car. I feel like there has to be a better system for people that have a lot of shit with them. Like, I have two little kids, one that can walk, but he can't on something like that. All these bags, a stroller, two car seats. Like, the guy did okay, but I feel like there should be dedicated vans for someone that has a lot of that stuff. Or like the rental car. See, here's a great idea for a rental car company. The curbside delivery from the offsite place to the curb. Hmm. Like, I would book them every time. If, like, Enterprise, if I get off the plane and I text them, the car's waiting for me at the curb of the airport, and I just slide my car to move on without having to go in the shuttle over to the thing. And it maybe is an additional fee or something.
Right.
I would pay that all night and all day.
Yeah, I agree. That makes perfect sense.
The guy that drove the shuttle, he's nice. He helped me unload everything, but he like put it like in a giant puddle because it was raining when we got there. Of course, that's the one thing. We get there as soon as we get out of the terminal, we go to get on the shuttle. It just like monster like torrential downpour. So I'm trying to load, and all these Jamoke guys with one little bag. No one helps. My wife is trying to drag the stroller onto the shuttle while I'm lugging all the luggage on. And then we get there, and the guy like unloads the car seats into this giant puddle. I'm like, what the fuck, buddy?
Jeez.
Can you give me a break? Like, I'll come get them from you. You don't have to even put them down. But anyway.
Mm. You did have one of the best pictures you sent that didn't, of course, have your fine children in it was that breakfast. You had a pretty fine breakfast meal you sent us. What was it? You had like some eggs there, some Le Jesse Infested special.
I forget the name of the actual order, but it was at Goldie's Restaurant in Naples off Pine Ridge. Mm-hmm. It was delicious. It was some biscuits and gravy, some eggs. I think it was either French toast was on there, some bacon. It was
French toast. Yeah.
It was good.
Looked good.
We split that. And yeah. There's a delicious English pub down there as well. I highly recommend called The Pub in Naples. So I think it's a chain. Like, not
it's
a chain chain.
Pub?
Yeah, The Pub. And I think it's like The Pub Naples, The Pub Orlando. You know, like, it seemed to be all around the country, the ones they had listed on the menu. So like a minor chain, but it was really good. The food was really good. The service was excellent, and they had a lot on tap. I went with the Pumpking from up here in, I think it's either New Hampshire or Vermont.
Oh, the Pumpking. Yes.
Though, which I did not have because I just had one that night, was the Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale on tap, which I only had before in Cincinnati. And here they have it in bottles, but I haven't seen it on tap outside of Cincy, and it's really good on tap.
Mm. Excellent. Excellent. Well, glad you had a nice trip. And now we're back, and fall is kind of officially upon us. I wouldn't say it's freezing yet, but it's definitely a lot crisper, as you said at the beginning, than it had been. But I don't know, what's the term for like a warm autumn? I don't know, because it's Indian summer. I'm sure that's offensive
summer.
Now. Yeah. Native American, of course it's offensive. They get credit for a holiday and they're pissing and moaning. Anyway, or a season. Anyway, let's get down to business. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, inside the Big Steel Box, creatively, JR, we continue our report card.
Hey, what is going on here?
Grading is what you're doing. Grading. Speaking of Saved by the Bell, have you watched Pitch?
I am one episode in. I've not watched the second one yet. But yes, okay. I did see Zach Morris as the catcher. He doesn't look like him. Like, if you didn't know that he was in it, I can see not knowing it's him for a while.
Yeah, no, he definitely bulked up. He's in a majority of the second episode. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's on his backstory. I mean, she's obviously the main character, but she relates in terms of his character and the manager, like their kind of backstory. But I highly recommend the show for those that haven't watched it. It's pretty good. It's on Fox. Although, were you the one who said it, though, that it's like an infomercial for Fox Sports 1 or whatever?
Yeah, you got Joe Buck all over the place. You got all the graphics.
Smoltz.
Katie Nolan showing up. Well, you know, everyone's there. Everyone from Fox is, like, involved. But it was good. It was surprisingly really good. It's got a lot of, like, guys and ladies popping up that you know because they did so many things. Like, Russell Dalrymple from Seinfeld is the owner. And then you got the dad from Wonder Years as the manager.
Yep.
And is the dad her dad? Is that the guy from Third Watch?
Yeah, he was in Sons of Anarchy. He was in Stand By Me. If that's the one I'm thinking of, yeah, that was him. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but yeah, that was him.
All right, so there you go. Good show.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. Anyway, he's in it. So, but definitely watch the second episode. His backstory's more highlighted, as well as Dan Loria, who, as you said, the dad from Wonder Years, who's the manager. So, anyway, we are not in San Diego tonight. We're a little more east of San Diego, but as mentioned, we continue our 2006-2007 report card, JR, but we enter the calendar year of 2007. You believe this? We've gone 21 years into the vintage vaults. And here we are entering yet another 2007.
Yeah.
It really is. Well, it gets a little kooky when I'm looking at our old board, the Pro Boards board, and we're like, and I'm running out of reviews for us to reference. Oh, that's when it gets a little, oh my God, we're getting close to catching up, which is crazy. But anyway, let us begin the calendar year, JR, with a, and I say this a lot, but it's going to happen in 2007 as well, a show that maybe you don't exactly remember, but because of the show after this is pretty memorable. Mm-hmm. But this one may not be as, but there might be some enjoyable little tidbits in it. For tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, it's Auld Lang Syne. Sayonara. 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 It's Auld Lang Syne. Okay. New Year's Revolution, 2007. The final one, JR.
Yes, our third and final.
Our third
and
final.
It's been a hell of a run.
It has been a hell of a run. 05 was pretty good. 06 was, but now I could ask you, we kind of know why. Because we'll find out after the end of this report card, when we begin the report card for 2007/2008, we'll see why they got rid of this pay-per-view. But this is the last one.
And here's a little fun fact for you, Scott.
Yes.
I believe, if I recall correctly,
mm-hmm.
I believe this was the first pay-per-view Mr. Flanagan and I watched at Picasso's.
Was that the debut of the chicken and broccoli pizza?
It may have been. No, I feel like we got, I don't know, I'm going to see him this weekend, so we'll reminisce a bit. But I feel like we did calzones the first time. And then we did not go for the Rumble, but we did go for No Way Out, and then it was on from there. I think Mania I ordered, and then after that we went pretty much every show.
Mm. Because when I my first jaunt with you, which was later on this calendar year, as a matter mm-hmm. of fact, it was nachos, which, of course, talking about Bonehead's nachos, pale in comparison.
Yeah, Picasso's nachos
salad.
Are not good.
No. Then the salads, of course, and then we had the broccoli and chicken pizza.
Yeah.
And by the end of the night, you were wondering how the hell we were going to make it home.
It was rough. I mean, there was rough days after eating there. Like, I mean, Boneheads is Boneheads, but I never feel like I used to leaving Picasso's. I mean, I felt like just my guts were being torn apart inside with that food. It was so,
yeah.
I think it was just the grease. But, I mean,
yeah, so heavy.
I remember Jim would have to go walk around outside because he was in such pain. And there was one time I walked all the way over because the bathrooms there were abysmal. So I'd walk over to like Walgreens to use the bathroom like during the fucking pay-per-view. I mean, it was a rough scenario. The worst time ever was we went, and then the next morning we had an appointment with a doctor around getting pregnant. And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to pay attention. It's an important meeting. It's a very important appointment. And we're talking, and I'm just pouring sweat. My stomach is killing me. Like I had to go get a key to go use this like locked bathroom because I was not going to make it to work after the appointment. I mean, I couldn't even focus on what they were saying. I was like in such pain the next day. I mean, Picasso stayed with you for about 12 to 15 hours. Just it was a rough scenario. And we ate. We went every month for like, you know, 5 years. So
no, I mean, I thought a lot of it was the pizza. I mean, the nachos were just not, they were mediocre for nachos. But then
Andy,
you had,
I used to think it was the nachos, though. I don't know. It was those chips. I don't know what the hell it was. The whole thing was a disaster.
I know. I mean, but that pizza, though, all that chicken and the thick cheese, and yeah. I think that might have been capped it off. But
I mean, it could have been also that we, you know, were there for like 10 hours and ate three full courses and drank soda and beer and stuff. So, I mean,
that is true. You know. Yeah, that's true. Because there were some nights, there were some days that we did go like at fucking 2 o'clock to watch the 4 o'clock games and. But you had your own little fan club there. You had Taker Lady, and you had that snarky little shit that wore the, I don't know, well, it was Brady at the time, and then I'm sure he changed to Edelman and some of those other annoying Patriots. But there's a couple other memorable. Oh, the guy that you met at the day of SummerSlam, that guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey. Right? The big dude?
Yeah. I forget his name now.
Anyway. I'm sure they have. I'm sure the barbecue where we are tonight is much better than food at Picasso's. January 7th, 2007. Live from the Kemper Arena in Kansas City, Missouri. Yes, that Kemper Arena. But, JR, The last time we were in this building for pay-per-view was not that fateful May evening in 1999. We have been there since. Do you remember when? For pay-per-view.
Something in 02. Backlash 02?
Correct. Whew. Yes, Backlash 02, when Triple H lost to Hulk Hogan. Was the last time on pay-per-view we were in Kansas City. So, yeah. Your attendance, right around 10,000. And your announcers, the voices of the Red Brand, good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. I'm sure the buy rate was probably not great. And, okay, Mr. Sutton and his very fruitful report.
New Year's Revolution, the tagline, the revolution continues. Do you remember the song? Probably not. It was a Jim Johnston original.
It was something I remember. Well, I watched it last night and I remember being very loud and very
race against time.
Yeah, whatever that is. probably didn't hear it again since.
220,000 buys. So yeah, not spectacular. Your WWE champion, John Cena, in the 112th day of his reign. Bobby Lashley, we love you. 35 days into his reign. Jeff Hardy, 55 days into his reign as Intercontinental Champion. Rated RKO, 55 days into their reigns as tag team champions, and Mickie James, 42 days into her reign as women's champion. 710 episodes of Raw in the books, 30 episodes of ECW, 441 episodes of Heat. We have a death here, Scott, and if you get this one, I'll let you be for the rest of your life. January 4th.
Shit. And I cheated, not cheated, but I looked last week at all the deaths. Because there's and not just that death, but there is a myriad of major deaths in 2007. Mm-hmm. This one, oof, God, probably some Mexican luchador or something, right?
The infamous Cowboy Lang, the midget wrestler, passed away on January
4th. Oh, that's right. I knew there was a midget that died in 07. That's right. Cowboy Lang, yes.
Oh,
poor Cowboy Lang.
Some vintage dirt notes here. The great Khali expected to receive a huge push, possibly leading to an ECW feud with Bobby Lashley. Claudio Castagnoli, released from the company before ever stepping in the ring. Of course, he would go back to the Indies and ROH and eventually make his way back. And he's still
that is true.
Working today.
The way you said that, I thought you were going to say, Cloudy has made her return. The way you said that.
That'd be some gimmick, though. Cloudy Castagnoli. Cesaro dressed up like a...
Cesaro in drag?
Yeah,
that's tremendous.
Gimmick there. Dark match, yeah. Vladimir Kozlov defeated Eugene.
Who?
That's it. There they go. Vlad. We'll talk about him.
Well, Vlad. Yeah, we'll get to him. He will. One of the guys cutting his teeth in the dark matches before we get there. So.
Make sex okay. With women, right, son? Big Vlad.
Oh, my God. One of the greatest moments in the history of this show, as I'm listening back to some of our old shows to kind of get ready for episode 500.
It's Cloudy jerking off in her soup.
No, it's not Cloudy jerking off in the soup, and it's not Puppet in the oatmeal in the trash can. It was the let's see, it was No Way Out 2003, and I don't know. I was on a roll. I had a great analysis of Triple H, Steiner.
Great analysis.
Best analysis. All of my endorsements.
The best analysis.
Yes, the best analysis. We have endorsements. Everybody, the police. We got it all. I was talking about No Way Out 03, and I was talking about the Steiner Triple H rematch, and I said, "Oh, you know, how could they insult us, saying we've already had a standard wrestling match, no gimmicks or anything?" And I meant to say this match needed something, needed a sexy stipulation, and instead I go, "This match needs more sex," and of course you. Jumped on it like a fucking hot knife through butter.
Like you on Triple H, I jumped on.
And we had a great, yes, we had a great, there was a great, we're going to play it at episode 500. I'm going
to
play the clip because that description did not do it justice.
Yes.
That's right, yes, of course. Yeah, I know, no kidding. Anyway, so there we go. Looking for my starts here. Okay, why don't we dive in, JR? All four championships are on the line this evening. And we're going to start the show with one, JR. Our first title match right out of the gate, baby. Our Intercontinental Champion, Mr. Jeff Hardy, will be defending the title to open our show with a gimmick and a familiar opponent. How did we get here?
Well, 12-11, Jonathan Coachman approached Johnny Nitro Molina and asked Nitro to help Umaga and his master Jeff Hardy later in the evening. In return, Nitro would earn an IC title match at New Year's Revolution. The next week, Nitro teamed with Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas to defeat Matt and Jeff Hardy. After the match, Nitro grabbed the title and stood over Jeff's prone body, taunting him with the gold, saying, delete! Delete! So, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, first New Year's Revolution without an Elimination Chamber. So.
Yes.
Note nugget there. Crowd very fired up here. Scott, fun moment as the cage lowers and the crowd starts to buzz as we start the pay-per-view calendar year with this big gimmick title match. Feud rolling on. Nitro's been busting his ass with double duty, doing singles here, tag with Mercury. But, of course, right now Mercury is recovering, so he's on the sidelines. Molina looking good as always. Hardy going the double duty route as well. Raw World as singles and then working with Matt as tag on SmackDown and ECW when it warrants. Nitro gets the advantage early, an aggressive attack on the lower back, but Hardy kicks his way back into the match. Hardy hammers away in the corner, knocking Nitro on his ass and hitting the slinging dropkick. Nitro comes back with a wheelbarrow slam for a near fall. Hardy blocks a suplex and lands a facebuster, but Nitro comes back with a springboard kick to the head for two. Nitro dropkicks Hardy into the cage and snaps his neck across the top rope. Nitro gets caught in the top rope, and Hardy dropkicks him into the cage and then tries to escape, but Nitro makes a save. He takes him to the mat with a back suplex. Hardy slings Nitro to the support beam and then takes him off the top with a Russian leg sweep. Nitro recovers and uses Hardy as a step to climb up the cage, but Jeff grabs him and Nitro turns and takes Hardy down to the mat with a big sunset flip powerbomb. Nitro again scales the cage, but Hardy slugs him down. Nitro ends up with his feet caught in the bars at the top and left hanging. Nitro frees himself, which is impressive. And both men start to climb out while Molina whips Hardy with a belt through the fence, allowing Nitro to hit a missile dropkick. Nitro whiffs on a dive off the cage, and Jeff drills him with a swanton and covers, but Nitro gets his foot on the rope. We get more battles on the cage wall, Jeff missing a twist of fate off the cage. Nitro starts to climb while Jeff goes through the door, but Molina blocks it. As Nitro comes down, Hardy kicks the door open, and Nitro falls on it, crotching himself before Hardy slides out for the win. I thought it was a great finish. I thought it was really innovative the way they did it, and it was timed really well. It didn't look hokey. Like, Nitro really timed his climb to land on the door. I thought it was a damn good cage match. I thought both guys really worked their asses off. They blended in some big bumps and innovative spots. I thought they had really good chemistry, and I thought it was a nice showing all around. I think Hardy continues to develop as an all-around worker, and Nitro keeps growing. I think this feud has been good for both of them, and it was a good start to the show.
Yes, and there were a lot of things I got out of this opener, JR. It was very, very, again, very well done, very well put together. Had a good formula. They both worked great. Step one, the cage match as a stipulation, perfect progression for the two of them. They had been feuding for, Jesus, 3 months, maybe even longer, I think. Did they wrestle at Unforgiven? I think they did, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so we're talking almost 5 months now. Yeah. And they've been finding innovative ways to continue this feud. So a cage stip here was perfect. Step two, you're talking about Jeff Hardy. And I'm going to say this about somebody else later in the show who's young. And Jeff Hardy, comparatively speaking, on the card is young, per se. But he felt very much like a leader in this match. Mm-hmm. Like, for the first time, again, I was listening to our, as I mentioned, I was listening to our No Way Out 03 vault.
Yeah, that's a good companion to this when you, well, at least to Jeff's return. Because, I mean, yeah, like, God, but that was his.
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously, as we were saying, he was a friggin' mess in that match against Jericho. And here, after 4 years, a complete 180.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a leader. He's going, you know, he's not a spot monkey. He's got spots. But the difference is, instead of rolling around a couple punches and then a spot, he actually found some pretty good, ways of combining the spots and getting Nitro involved.
Yeah,
in
his,
the activity in the middle, you know?
His overall psychology is much improved. He's a much better all-around worker. He connects his matches. He connects with the crowd better. He's just really evolved from just hitting spots or working as a tag team. Just as a singles competitor, he's really come a long way with being able to piece together matches. And like you said, he clearly has been leading this. And I think Nitro's improved as a result of it. Hardy coming back is one of the biggest. You don't hear a lot about it, but he was one of the biggest kind of, I'm trying to think of the word, but signings, I guess, over the last like decade. Like them getting him back brought back such immediate star power, and a guy that had pieced it all together and become such a really good all-around worker that added so much depth. He was versatile. He could do the tag stuff. He could do, you know, kind of garbage style wrestling, but he was good enough now as a face to have regular matches and sell his ass off, and he could fly around the ring. He could work on the mat a bit. He really came back as a complete wrestler and added a lot of depth. Just him on his own, plus with the types of guys he could work with, brought a lot to the company, and both in the tag and singles division. So he was a huge pickup to get him back in the fall of 06.
Absolutely, and he again, it's not a problem of you know, still being kind of a mess. And I mean, he would have his issues again, but we would never see it in the ring again per se. But he was spectacular here in terms of knowing the ring now and knowing the match, how he wants the match to go. Particularly in a setting like this, where he is very experienced in cage matches, both singles and tag. And really, him and Nitro put together a good equation from beginning to end of a good cage match. And it wasn't just a bunch of spot fights and punching and kicking spot, punching and kicking spot, which is what I had criticized about Rob Van Dam. And step three, I don't know if we've ever seen this before, JR. Correct me if we have, but that ending where the whole Nitro gets crotched on the door was pretty ingenious. I don't think we've ever seen that before in a cage match to this point. I don't think so.
The closest I can think of is the one we just watched for our refreshes with the Steiners and Money Inc., where Rick caught IRS on his shoulders.
Yes.
So kind of a similar concept, but I don't recall one where a guy got hung up on the door like that.
No, it was really good.
And like I said, they timed it perfectly. Like, even me knowing it was coming, still, when it happened, caught me off guard. You know what I mean? Like, because they do it so smoothly. You don't. It's not like it doesn't feel staged. It just happens.
Exactly. No, I agree 100%. And yeah, it's just, I thought the ending was really good, and it ended a great match. So Jeff Hardy retains his Intercontinental Championship in a very good match and a great opener in the first pay-per-view match of 2007.
And if we do something like, I mean, I don't know what we'll do, but if we do something along the lines of like chemistry for the year, like Hardy's and Eminem overall have been really good, whether it's tag or these guys doing single stuff.
Right.
Just across the board have been very impressive.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. They've worked very well together, and not the last time we'll see them together either. All right, next up, a bonus match, JR. Oh, by the way, did you notice two things I wanted to bring up first before we move on? Number one, just for the, you know, pay-per-view arena states dorks like myself, this is the sixth pay-per-view in history in the state of Missouri, and now Kansas City and St. Louis have three apiece. Secondly, did you notice that, and I don't know if this was the network editing, but did you notice that they, off the network, they went right to the open, right to the opening graphic, then to the arena for JR and King, then they were talking about the cage, and then they did the montage. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Very weird. I don't know if that was an editing thing or if that, I don't remember if that's how it aired.
No, I think it might have just been their way of kind of kicking off the year. And I think it was to allow the time for the cage to come down, like set the stage, show it start to lower, then do the package and then have it come down. Yeah. I thought it actually added a cool atmosphere because the crowd was super hyped when the cage started coming down. It was cool to get to see that instead of just starting the show and the cage was down. I thought it added a little excitement.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was just curious.
Yeah,
I thought I was curious what your thoughts were, because I noticed that last night when I watched it. All right, next up, JR, a match that was added at the last minute. This was not on the original card. One of our favorite gimmicks from 1999 and 2000. I think we used it a lot in 2006 as well. Tag Team Turmoil.
I was waiting for the APA to come out.
I know, yes, because they're like 8-0 lifetime in these matches. And JR and King said that the winner of this match would get a future World Tag Team Championship match against the winner of our match later this evening. Our first two teams, one of them pretty popular, and that is, of course, the Highlanders, Robbie and Rory. And while they were being introduced, JR, the other JR, wished Roddy Piper good recovery. Of course, as everyone knows, he had a back injury while him and Flair were tag team champions, and when he was getting checked out, it turned out he had cancer. And the cancer was removed, and he was recovering very nicely at this point in 2007. So JR mentioned that. He thought of it because, of course, Robbie and Rory were from Scotland. And JR, if I could come up with music for you to replace your boy being gone, these guys were it. Now, I don't know if they had reunited already or if this was just this night. But one of the best teams of 2003 made their return on this evening, JR.
Put
and that's your boys.
The long-awaited reunion of the world's greatest tag team occurred on December 4th when Shelton Benjamin defeated Super Crazy. Charlie Haas ran into the ring and celebrated with a confused Benjamin. The next week, Crime Time, the Highlanders are playing a game of chance backstage when Haas interrupted and lambasted Crime Time for perpetuating stereotypes. Benjamin then showed up, called them disgraces, and announced that the world's greatest tag team was reuniting. They would win their first match as a team since 2004 later that night, defeating the Highlanders, and on 1-1, Crime Time and the Highlanders defeated Benjamin, Haas, Cade, and Murdoch. So, that leads us to our first tilt of this turmoil. Bonus match, like you said, a great return of the world's greatest. Adds much needed legit depth to the division. That was a smart move since neither guy was really doing much. Haas lands the first few strikes, but Rory fights him off, and the Highlanders work him over for a bit. Rory eventually gets trapped in a World's Greatest Tag Team double team, wipes him out. The attack continues, and Shelton works the upper body of Rory. Rory gets a flash roll-up, but Shelton survives until Rory wriggles free and tags in Robbie. Robbie cleans house until Shelton takes him off the top with a great superplex for the elimination. Jim Duggan made his WWE return back on October 3rd, 2005.
Ridiculous.
The Raw Homecoming Special. It was his first WWE appearance in SummerSlam Spectacular back on August 22nd when he lost to Yokozuna. You can read about that in our Vintage Vault Refresh series, PlayStation.com. Later that year, Duggan joined WCW, had a long, successful run in Atlanta, winning multiple titles along the way. I got the American flag. In 1998, he hit the disabled list as he battled kidney cancer. After successfully winning that war, Duggan returned to the ring later in the year, remained in WCW until folded in 01, worked the indie circuit until rejoining WWE in 2005. In 06, he returned to the ring, entering into minor televised feuds and serving as a mentor to Eugene.
That makes sense.
The two parted ways in November when Eugene snapped and turned on Duggan after a match with the Spirit Squad.
Because he got attacked in the retard center.
Oh, God. Duggan is Super Crazy out next. Very weird team, but why the hell not? Shelton catches Duggan coming, and World's Greatest goes to work picking him apart with double teams and quick tags. Duggan finally shrugged off Haas and hit him with the three-point stance before making the tag. Crazy worked over both guys, but World's Greatest tag team caught up to him, and Haas took him over the German to grab the elimination. Are you surprised, Scott, that Duggan did not take the fall here?
Of course! Jesus! Poor Super Crazy! God, man, that's wrong. That's just wrong. Oh, God, him in those stupid fucking blue shorts. Oh, God.
I think those are my gym shorts or St. Mary's that I was wearing.
I'm your borrowed gyms. Oh, my God. Cowboy Lang would have been a better fucking partner for this match, for God's
sakes.
I mean,
the most surprising and least surprising thing of all time is that Jim Duggan doesn't job this match here. And
doesn't
Super
job.
Crazy take the fall.
It's terrible. Terrible.
Cade and Murdoch are out next. They clobber both members of the world's greatest from behind and slug away until Cade starts to work over Shelton. Murdoch comes in and cracks Shelton with a big boot to the face, and the two both work up over his upper back until Shelton kicks free and tags out. Haas runs through both with a dropkick and a T-bone throw. Haas hits Murdoch with a missile dropkick, but Cade whacks him from behind. Haas locks Murdoch in the House of Pain, but Cade lands a punch off the top to steal the elimination. I thought they looked awesome, Shelton and Haas, and I think they should have run the table and just won this match because I think they should have hitched their wagon to those guys and then kept the Hardys together, kept them and them together for a bit, and let those three teams just, like, dominate the tag division. That's what I would have done. Alas. Alas.
I agree with you 100%.
Crime Time comes out and dominates the match, grabbing a near fall. Cade and Murdoch slug their way back into it, hit JTG with a high-low. Cade and Murdoch trap him in the corner and use strikes to control. After a pretty long heat segment, JTG catches Murdoch coming off the middle rope, but Cade cuts off the tag. JTG escapes from a double suplex and finally tags out. Shad comes in and cleans house, avoiding a high-low. Crime Time is a double-team neckbreaker, Samoan drop for the win. Crime Time is the most over-team of the division, so they made sense to me to win, but Haas and Benjamin looked the best. Match was fine, but pretty long. Ate up a lot of time. Crowd is mostly quiet, I thought, outside of a spot here or there. The tag division definitely has more depth, and it's, you know, they're displaying it well. I remember that being a thing at the time. you know, every few years you'd always hear the stories that they're going to, you know, rejuvenate the tag division. And this was definitely one of them. You could tell them focusing on, I mean, this goes 20 minutes. And they're actually adding some depth around the teams. We get, what, five teams here? And not even counting the champions, you know, and a couple others that are floating around. So they're definitely rejuvenating the division. But the match itself is just fine.
I other than maybe Kate Murdoch, back in the dressing room and you go, come here, super crazy. I got to deal with it. You and Eugene can get together. You got to eat the pin there, tough guy. Step one, we've already talked about it. Reuniting Shelton and Haas is. So I'm going to let Super Crazy eat the pin. A huge get-together for Haas and Benjamin. Tremendous idea to put them together. And you're probably right. They probably should have just run the table. Step two, we already talked about this. What the fuck is Duggan doing in this match? Oh, so Super Crazy can eat the pin. Terrible idea. I don't get it. If you're trying to elevate the division, why the two of them, for the love of God? Why the two of them? There was nobody else to team with Super Crazy. Really?
I don't mind Duggan being in the mix here. Like, he gets a pop. He's fun. Him and Crazy mix for a funny team. He just doesn't need to let Crazy take losses. Maybe he should be getting pinned.
Yeah.
I don't mind him in the spot, though. I mean, whatever. He's not doing anything wrong.
No, I mean, there had to have been another team to fit in that spot. But, and step three. But Super Crazy, you go take care of him, and I'll just stay back here. Is this the first time we've seen Cade Murdoch in a while? I mean, have they been on Raw to this point? Probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been on TV. We saw them, I don't know, Cyber Sunday probably was the last pay-per-view.
Yeah. They look a little different. You know, Cade Murdoch not in, he's in like cutoff jeans and like a, you know, a plaid shirt now instead of regular tights. And Cade, I mean, what the fuck happened to him? I mean, he was, you know, he was in good shape and he was trim. He was kind of like the speed guy of the team. And he just got freaking incredibly puffy. He should have taken some of the stuff too.
I think it's called drugs. I'm
pretty sure he went to the pharmacy, probably near where you were vacationing. But I mean, he was supposed to be like the quick one and Murdoch was supposed to be the bludgeoner. Meanwhile, all Cade's doing when he's in the ring is elbows and forearms and, you know, cheap knees. And I mean, I don't know what the hell happened to him. He got fat. He got like bloated and lazy. I don't know. I mean, he was the Murdoch. That's Murdoch's job. He was the big, you know, grizzled, ornery, ugly dude on the team. And he was supposed to be like the good looking guy, like the Shawn Michaels of the team based on his, you know, who trained him.
Same,
and instead,
same problems. He followed right in those footsteps.
Yeah, that's true. That is true too. I was disappointed because I really love them as a team, but now they look all misshapen and I don't know. If not Crime Time, it definitely should have been Shelton and Haas. So there you go. Crime Time, JTG and Shad Gaspard are your, I guess you could say, de facto number two contenders, I guess, for the World Tag Team Championship, and they will get a title shot somewhere down the line. We go backstage, JR, for Lucando.
Yeah, very timely we go backstage. Vince McMahon talking to the coach about the big feud that was raging throughout pop culture, and that was Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump. They had big public issues, and he says, what if we have them fight on Raw tomorrow night? What do you say? And promises coach that he'll make it happen. And then Ron Simmons comes in and says, damn, to coach. And then Bill Simmons comes in and says, hey, Tom Brady.
Larry Bird, basketball Jesus. Well, because he was talking about the greatest catchphrase ever is you're fired. Greatest catchphrase ever, you're fired, you're fired. And then he turns around and he points the shirt and the best catchphrase is,
I got a great idea. No, that, I mean, it was, I mean, that was a big feud at the time. That was... Back when Trump was, you know, not as dangerous as he is these days. It was more
just kind of sticking in his own world, yeah, because pretty much.
A little goof.
All right, next up, a Now, I know what you're thinking, JR. I know where you think this analysis is going to go, but I'm not
going...
It's going
from 12 to... Or 8 to midnight. What does it say?
6 to midnight. Yeah.
6 to 8, about, 15. Whatever it is, as far as you can go.
Yeah. About the last time Nate was in this position. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get into that again, because I have a different perspective of it now. But... all right, how do we get to this point between the newcomer and the...
Oldcomer.
Former world champion.
On 12-4, former Spirit Squad member Kenny showed up backstage trying to form an alliance with Rated RKO, looking for revenge on DX. RKO told him to go out and prove himself first. Later in the night, Kenny helped RKO and M&M defeat DX and the Hardy Boys. The next week, RKO and Kenny, now known as Kenny Dykstra, lost a tough match to DX and Ric Flair when Flair pinned Kenny. On 12-18, Kenny got his revenge, pinning Flair cleanly in a singles match. Afterwards, he refused to shake Flair's hand and strutted off. On 1-1, Kenny teamed with Chris Masters to defeat Carlito and Flair when Kenny again pinned Flair. After the match, RKO came out and worked with Kenny to wipe Flair out, eventually crushing him with a concerto. So I did find it a little funny. Or coincidental, ironic, however you want to say it. It harkened back to when the Outlaws were trying to win over DX. Like, didn't that feel like this with Kenny and RKO trying to take out DX?
Definitely.
This young guy trying to kind of prove his point, and this, you know, smarmy dickhead veteran heel team was using him to their advantage.
Yeah, it's kind of like Eugene with Evolution in 04. Yeah, except, you know, obviously sleazier. But, yeah, I mean, obviously we all knew when he was... in Spirit Squad that he was the showcase guy, and he was the guy who, was going to be the man. So
also, I don't trust Kenny's. Ken, I'm good with. Using the Kenny. It's like Billy.
I can't stand the fact that they took the drunken, gambling, degenerate New York Met today to say his name of all people. It's like, why don't you call him Kenny Mookie or something? You know,
it's an odd decision.
Kenny Strawberry. I mean,
Kenny Reigns. You know. No, it's a weird decision. It's a weird decision. I mean, just, I don't know, Kenny. Like, give me a Ken. Give me a nice, strong Ken.
Yeah.
Little Kenny. Kenny is on his own as the Spirit Squad is gone. Big feud for him and Flair. He's picked up wins already. Kenny comes out in a Flair robe. Story, of course, is about him being brash youngster wanting to eliminate Flair. Flair back to feuding with young guys as a litmus test and a gatekeeper. Of course, we're all on board with. Basic start here with Ken leading a couple of shots, but Flair shrugging them off and firing back with chops. And then knocks Big Ken to the floor. Ken pulls Flair out, suplexes him on the floor with a heart. Doesn't that sound so much better? Ken pulls him out of the ring. Not Kenny. Kenny pulls him out of the ring. Back inside, Kenny hits another suplex for two and then keeps working the lower back, hooking in a Boston Crab. Flair gets a rope break, but Kenny starts in control, peppering him with punches. Flair comes out of the corner with chops and then blocks a figure four with an inside cradle for a near fall. Flair drops Kenny with an elbow and heads up, but Kenny catches him and slams him off, and little Kenny follows him with a missile drop kick for two. Flair goes to the eyes, but hits a chop block and then goes to work on the leg. Flair gets to figure four on, but Ken lasts for a while. Flair slaps him around on the hold, but Ken eventually breaks the hold, and then little Kenny goes low and rolls up Flair for the win to go 3-0 over Rick. I thought it was a pretty good match. Very basic, but well-structured. I thought both guys actually looked good. I thought it was a strong performance by Big Ken. Set him up for a big push. Puts Flair away for good. And Flair's value's in a weird spot, Scott. They have to figure out what they want him to be. Is he going to be this jobber to the stars, basically? Is he going to be Terry Taylor, 1993? Or, you know, is he going to maintain some of that credibility and not put these guys over month after month and week after week? Like, what is he going to be? I would argue at this point that his value is being used up. I think they should have found someone for him to manage again, like they do with Triple H or Batista, and work in that level for a bit. Let him be an advisor / occasional tag partner. Get out of the ring for a while. Because I feel like it's diminishing returns with him at this point.
Obviously, this is a similar situation to what happened at Backlash 2006. And we all know what happened there in the discussion we had. But I will get to that in a moment. Step one, I do think Kenneth had – first of all, I don't think we could call him Ken because technically there's a Ken on SmackDown, even though they didn't really say Ken anymore. Mm-hmm.
Such a name, though. Ken.
Yeah,
Ken,
no. Ken. Ken.
He's not Kenny Ken. Ken. Not Kenny Kennedy.
Kenny Kennedy sounds like a point guard for Brown. Kenny Kennedy. He had a little bit of charisma. I actually dug the promo right before the match started. I thought it was pretty good. He was growing slowly as a singles character and as a worker. But he was obviously protected with all those other guys, and now it was time for him to be the one to shine. Step two. If Ric Flair wanted to put over the talent, who might argue? So I'm not going to go through the same pissing match that I did with Umaga at Backlash Show 6, because obviously we see where Umaga is right now. So, fine. But how far is this going to go before his legacy is completely flushed on the toilet? I mean, doing it's one thing with guys that you know are going to be advanced. But is Kenny now where Umaga was at Backlash 06? Probably not. So you don't – was it okay to lose three times to this guy? Now, perhaps he requested this. Maybe he liked Kenny.
Let me say this, though. Macro, right? Macro version. So forget the three losses to Kenny, two losses, four losses, to whatever. Like, to me, right. that's irrelevant. Is that did Tugboat just come by your house?
No, the my computer finally finished the updates, and now it's firing off a bunch of stuff. So,
oh, okay.
Hey, Dust.
Hate that motherfucker. To me, one, two, three, whatever. Those losses don't really tell the story. The story to me is, overall, from a macro point of view, what is Ric Flair? Where is he at? Where should he be going? What is the point, you know, of him? Like, to me, that is the bigger question. Like, if he would have lost twice instead of three, like, it doesn't matter at this point. Just going forward, is he used up? Has he put over enough guys that at this point, to continue getting in these shoes and putting over guys, you're hurting his value and is meaning less and less for other guys? Like, to me, he needed to be rebuilt just a bit. And that doesn't mean picking up wins. He just needs to get the fuck out of the ring for a bit and reestablish some value and his legacy so then he can put someone over eventually. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, doing these jobs over and over aren't really getting anyone over at this point. Like, this was middle of the fucking show. It doesn't even feel like a huge deal anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
Is what it is. So, I don't know. I felt like there was more juice in the orange to get guys over from Ric Flair. Orange skin. But I just felt like they needed some time. He needed some time out of the ring right now. He needed to reset his value. Maybe show some video packages. Let him manage someone and get on a run. Something like that versus where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, truly, what is the point of this? I mean, is this his thing? I mean, is he putting over so many guys to the point where now it's not even worth it anymore? And that's really the unfortunate part of it. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I hearken back to right before that, right before that, Umaga match when he was in the Money in the Bank and he freaking almost killed himself. Is it time? Is it time?
Hey, Dust.
is it worth it at this point to just keep putting guys over but beating your body up at 59 or 58 years old?
Well, Steve Riddle actually made a good point. I don't know if gets a chance to go back and read his Vintage Raw preview, and he did this match. And he said, I mean, you could see physically the toll that 06 had taken on him. Like, he looks rough. Like, he looks like, you know, he looks like he's feeling every one of those thumbtacks, every one of those ladder bumps, every one of those chair shots that he suffered. I mean, 06 was, it was a crazy year for him. And, you know, he worked a hectic schedule, and there were a lot of garbage matches. And you wonder how much of that was really wearing him out. Which, again, speaks to my point that they should have just gut him out of there and just let him do an advisor role or GM role. You know, we don't even have a – who's a GM on Raw? I mean, coach, do we even have anyone? So I'm not even sure. So,
right.
You know, maybe let him do that for a bit. Anything. Just give him a break. Like, it's diminishing returns on every level. He's beaten up. He's beaten down. His matches aren't as good. And, I mean, this one is good. He can do the basics. But to me, he just needs he just needs a break, like just a big break to reestablish himself.
Right. No, he does. He does. He needs to because he worked his, I mean, pretty much 05 and 06. I mean, he had his foot on the gas, you know, for a guy, maybe because he saw Hogan back or whatever. I don't know. But he definitely needs to re-energize if he's going to continue his in-ring career. There's no doubt about that. And step three, the one thing about Kenny, his work is – he needs something to distinguish himself. I feel like his work is just kind of ordinary and not anything that people are going to remember. That's the one thing about Kenny. I think he's got some charisma, and he's a decent promo cutter. But watching that match, which wasn't terrible, but I feel like he really didn't distinguish himself from the pack as somebody who – is supposed to be pushed as a major player. That needs to change. Kenny needs to distinguish himself in ring. Cause I really, nothing really steps, you know, stood out for me in this match in that aspect. So, but he does get the win over a very broken Ric Flair at this point, which is really, really sad.
Quickly becoming an obsolete Buell Ric Flair.
He needs a xylophone. All right. We backstage? I don't think so.
Yeah, we are. Where Johnny Nitro and Melina are in the training room. Nitro tells Melina to call Mercury and say the Hardys need to pay. Melina leaves the room, runs to Victoria, who asks her to become a team to dominate the tag division, the women's division. Victoria says if Melina helps her tonight, she'll get the first title shot. Melina ponders and then leaves.
Which leads us, JR, to our next match. Our second title match of the evening, the Women's Championship, is on the line. Your champion still Mickie James, who won it back at Survivor Series, at the Survivor Series. And what about Victoria and this list? What are we talking about here, JR?
There's a kiss on there. On 11/27, Victoria won a Divas Battle Royal to become the number one contender for the women's title. But the next week, Victoria defeated Maria and crossed her name off a list. After the match, she beat down Mickie and left her lying after Widow's Peak. On 12/11, Victoria defeated Tori Wilson and crossed her name off the list as well. And the next week, carnage continued as Victoria pinned Mickie in a non-title match and thus crossed off Mickie's name and added the World Championship to the bottom of it. Finally, on 1/1, Victoria assaulted Lillian Garcia, but Mickie eventually made the save. So good reheating of Victoria, having her keep the checklist in both of the division. The Diva division is sagging quite a bit, Sagat, I thought, on talent. No pun intended. Two top workers in the ring in a well-built feud is helping things a bit. Victoria takes control right away, working the neck and the arm, using her power to keep Mickie down until Mickie comes back with a flurry of throws and a dropkick for a one count. Mickie ends up on the edge of the apron, and Victoria kicks her to the floor. Victoria follows her out and pitches her back inside as she jaws at Lillian. Victoria kicks away and chokes Mickie in the ropes, but Victoria misses a moonsault to let Mickie back into the match. Mickie hits a flurry, including hard punches to the face for a near fall. Victoria gets shoved to the floor, and Melina comes out to help. Mickie fights her off and heads back inside. Mickie goes for a DDT, but Melina hooks her leg and ties her up. Victoria grabs her and goes to the Widow's Peak, but Mickie rolls through for two. Maria and Candice come out and fight off Melina. Mickie turns a power slam into a DDT for the win. Fine women's match, Scott. I thought a little clunky, but hard-hitting and well-booked, with Victoria being a bitch, biting her in the ass at the end. Mickey's doing her best to hold down the fort. Victoria's a good, strong heel presence, but this division's taking on water quickly. They definitely need to do something to beef things up a bit. But as is, this match and feud was decent enough to keep things chugging along.
Right. Step one. Would this segment on Raw be better if it was Mila Kunis and Laura Prepon instead of these two freaking dopes. And really, Danny Masterson should have a Led Zeppelin t-shirt on or Pink Floyd.
Is there like
or something
a 70 show reunion or something? Like, why are they together? Are they doing a
I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea.
They must be doing
I don't know what show. What's Kutcher doing? I don't even know what he's doing now. Danny Masterson has that had that other show on where he was like the he had like a what is it, The Last Job or something? I don't know. Some TBS show he was on. I remember that, but you know, you can't have Mila Kunis there sipping Jim Beam and Laura Prepon with her, you know, lesbian tattoos from Orange is the New Black. I mean, come on. Instead of these two goofs. I'm surprised they didn't find, what's his name? What the hell's his name?
Fez?
Not Fez. Well, Fez, but the other one, the main character. What the hell's his name? The dumbass. Where's Red Foreman? I would rather have him yell at Kevin Owens.
Eric anyway. Foreman? He's, I haven't seen him at all. He was in that movie with,
what the hell's his name? He's got a weird name.
Was it Kevin Costner? Who was in that movie he was in? Where he bangs the his
oh daughter.
Daughter,
yeah, yeah, it is. Is it Kevin Costner? No, it's was it Mel Gibson?
No, it definitely was not Mel Gibson.
Maybe it is Kevin Costner. No, it's not Mel Gibson. Maybe it was Kevin Costner. I have to look that up. What the fuck is his name?
Batman.
Oh, Topher Grace. That's it.
Wasn't he in Batman?
No, he was in Spider-Man. He was Venom. Yeah, he was Venom in the Forgotten in that last Forgotten Spider-Man.
The movie was he was in Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. In Good Company.
Yes, Harrison Ford, right? Or
no,
was
it was,
Kevin Costner?
Dennis Quaid.
Oh, it's forgettable. Anyway.
Harrison Ford doesn't have time. He already works around the clock.
That's right, yes.
Who was the chick?
Oh,
was,
what a great show.
Scarlett Johansson was in that. That's, she's a chick in that movie.
She's a chick in it, yeah. Did you watch That 70s Show? Do you like it?
Yeah, it's fine.
No, it's a tremendous show. I loved it. Great finale.
He's still making movies, by the way, this guy. He was in like 10 movies in 2014.
Who, Topher Grace?
Never heard
Where
of
is
a... Valentine's what? Day is the last thing he was in that I remember. And if you haven't ever seen Valentine's Day, just go to our index and search for Josh Richards' takedown piece on Valentine's Day. And it's fantastic, by the way. Go ahead.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he's very good in that. Okay, step one, the real step one. Great turn for Victoria. She kind of got lost in the shuffle for a while. And I think she was a good replace. And because she's got that kind of attitude, if you go back to 2002 with the feud with Trish. You know, she wanted to be like the sex appeal one because she normally wrestled in like normal singlets, but here she's wrestling like a bikini top and she's kind of showing it that she normally doesn't. So it was kind of a different turn for Victoria in that aspect. Step two, great feud for both of them, for Mickey, Lita gone, Trish gone. I agree with you that the division's a little soft right now. And that's mainly because the two, you know, the number one biggest face and the number one biggest heel are both gone. And, you know, due to the fact that we haven't had a Raw show since Survivor Series, actually since really Unforgiven, but, you know, since Survivor Series when we had the title change and, you know, December was pretty much that ECW mess and Armageddon, we really hadn't seen a women's division showcased because it wasn't their turn. Now it is, and we look at it and the division's a little weak. So they definitely need some work to kind of reestablish some of the girls on this, the women in this division to get them better and kind of re-strengthen them with Trish. And that's a double whammy. You lose, you know, the faces of the division in the Attitude Era twice and both of them in the span of 3 months. So they definitely needed to boost up and get that division kind of, you know, rolling again. And step three, I could go either way because I like both of them. I wouldn't have minded Victoria winning here. Maybe to have Mickey chase to Mania. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I'm not upset Mickey won, and the match was fine. But I think Victoria winning wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. Kind of keep that going. If there was one belt that was going to change hands tonight, This one probably would have been it. So, but no harm, no foul.
No, I think you kind of Mickey's just like Mickey's becoming the steadying compass point of this thing, like of the division. I'm fine letting her hold it. I don't think Victoria's over enough to even do like a mini run. I just let Mickey hold it until you find someone that can kind of hang.
Yeah. No, I'm fine with that. Like I said, I'm just, oh, good grief. Is that, oh, look like Marcy Darcy for a minute. Oh, good God. I was like, what the hell happened to her?
These are like cancer survivors, you jerk.
Well, I don't know. It didn't look like it from who, Enzo? Good grief. No, are we giving away more belts? Well, let's see the crowd boo the new belts. I wonder if they're pink belts. Any event, Mickie James retains the women's championship over Victoria. I do not believe we go backstage here. Pretty sure we go right to the next match, no?
Correct.
Okay. Next up, our third title match of the evening, and I guess you can...
Put my toofer in your grace, Criscolo. This is a tough night for me, buddy. I'll be coming home, creeping around, coming into your bedroom with my ice pack strapped around my quad, my big throbbing quad, hamstring greased up, needing a bit of a rub down. I'll never forget how you treated me that night, Criscolo. You're so gentle, so loving. Hey, Scott, you ever get that feeling? I needed some sexual healing, baby, and you were there for me. UB40 came on, your 1993 mixtape, and you named me. It's our song, it'll always be our song, Criscolo. You wheeled me into that hospital room. You sat by my bed, feeding me ice chips.
That's true, is he pregnant?
Eating that Italian hoagie, I'll never forget it.
Big throbbing quad, huh? Yeah.
Dr. G with his Beelzebub robot.
Oh, God.
It's a night to remember, just like that Mandy Moore movie. Walk to Remember. It was our first date. Never forget it, Criscolo. You're so kind. I'll see your beautiful face in about 9 months, babe.
Ice chips, huh?
He's hungry.
Oh, my God. Nice job, Enzo. Knocked all the damn belts over. What a dope. Very traumatic. What's about to happen here? Our World Tag Team Championship on the line. When your champions, rated RKO, we've had it since October, take on the team they've been feuding with since November. Actually, October, Cyber Sunday. But it's coming to a head here because there's gold on the line, JR. Gold.
There is gold, sir. Let's see about that gold. Not just the gold-plated dildo. On 11/27, rated RKO fired a major salvo at DX. Dragging a bloodied Ric Flair to the ring and leaving him for dead after a pair of concertos. The next week, RKO teamed with Eminem to defeat DX and the Hardy Boys. On 12/11, DX got some revenge, teaming with Flair to defeat RKO and Kenny. RKO looked to line up Shawn Michaels with a concerto, but Triple H made the save with his sledgehammer. The next week, Edge won a battle royal to earn a WWE title match, last eliminating Michaels. Edge would receive his title match later in the show, but lost to John Cena thanks to some DX shenanigans. The team would cross paths again later that night when RKO teamed with Umaga to face DX and Cena. The match ended in no contest, but RKO stood tall after dropping Michaels on a chair with an RKO and bashing Hunter's head in with a pair of concertos. 2 weeks later, saw RKO again wipe out Flair after DX had issued a stern warning about the pay-per-view earlier in the night. And we'll cover that next fact in a momento. So, speaking of momento, you know, Triple H. RKO, a great destruction of Flair in the build-up. Feud still edging on and has been a good one to eat up time for all four guys. Reestablishes Orton as a main event player. You get the usual DX entrance and shtick. Crowd is all fired up. DX jumps RKO in the aisle and they brawl around the ring. Edge takes a hard bump on the steel entrance and Orton gets rammed into the steps. The bell finally rings and Hunter is all over Edge, choking and tearing at his face. Michaels keeps pouring it on until Edge slips away and tags out to Orton, but gets caught and beat on as well. DX tags in and out and the kicks the piss out of Orton, busting open the bridge of his nose. Great revenge beating early with DX showing lots of anger and aggression. Edge is able to make it back in and take out Hunter's leg with a chop block. Edge pounces and targets the leg, but eventually runs into the post and allows Hunter to tag out. Michaels runs through Edge, but Orton loves him the clothesline from the apron. Michaels recovers and dives into both members of RKO with a somersault senton to the floor. Edge comes back and spears Michaels off the apron into the floor, and then Orton bashes him with the belt to swing the tide. Michaels busted open with a nasty cut and is pitched back inside, where Orton takes turns working him over with strikes and targeting the cut. Michaels tries to chop his way free but gets double-teamed and dropped with a hard double-team backbreaker. After a more focused attack of the back, Michaels escapes and makes the hot tag to a big pop. Hunter takes care of both RKO, but fucks his quad up during a spinebuster and is immediately clear he's hurt. Hunter guts through it, hitting another spinebuster, but the referee tosses up the X. Orton tries an RKO, but Hunter just falls apart and collapses. Michael stays in control, hits sweet chin music on Orton, but Edge knocks him to the floor. Edge crawls over and covers Hunter for a two count, and Hunter somehow dodges a spear from Edge, and again, somehow it's a pedigree on Edge, but that only gets a two since he didn't hit it flush. Michaels flies back in and then out of the ring with a suicide dive onto Orton, and then clobbers the ref, grabs a chair, and smashes both Edge and Orton with it to draw the DQ. Orton hits a sick blade job and is pouring blood. DX bashes the shit out of both guys with chairs to gain their revenge and basically end the feud now that Hunter is hurt. Of course, Hunter somehow pedigrees Edge on a table as Michaels puts Orton through another one with an elbow off the top. I actually thought this match was pretty good. It had a really nice flow, was building well to a hot finish before all hell broke loose. Michaels was a real veteran out there, kept everything together as Edge and Orton kind of sorted out what they were going to do. I thought it's been a good feud for all guys. It's rough to see it go down like this, but I thought they did a good job of gaining some closure in the post-match beatdown despite what happened, and just having RKO keep the belts and come out on top. Somehow Hunter's walking around during the post-match, just insane pain tolerance and guts to push through there. And of course, as we noted, the second time in less than 6 years, Triple H tore his quad. This time around is his right leg. It was his left leg last time. Word leaked out pretty quickly. He underwent surgery. He'd missed most of the year, including WrestleMania. And, of course, he was originally booked to take on, the rumor is, John Cena at WrestleMania in the main event. And this could mean the end of the DX storyline. So we'll see if Michaels recruits someone else or they just kind of move things or, move things in a different direction. The rumor at the time was Michaels may take time off as well since he was kind of worn out. So lots going on here, Scott. I'll let you talk about the big moment, but I will give Triple H credit because he really gutted that one out. And I forgot just how long the match went on after he got hurt. Like, I mean, it didn't just end. Like, they kept going. And like I said, Michaels did a hell of a job keeping things moving.
Mm. Incidentally, I think the difference here is 2001, it was the whole muscle ripped right off the bone.
Yes, tell us the details, please.
This was a tendon between the tendon of the knee and the quad. So that's why I don't think it was as debilitating as 2001 was. 2001 was the entire muscle. This was just a tendon connecting the muscle to the kneecap or whatever the hell it is. So I don't think it was as devastating in that aspect. I'm sure he's still hurt. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But it wasn't as bad as his, you know, muscle rolling up his leg like in 2001. But, yeah, I mean, the match went on for, what, another, like, 6 minutes or 7 minutes or something? I thought it was close to the end.
Yeah.
All right, step one. Honestly, the belts were never an issue here. I don't think – believe it or not, I never really thought Hunter or Sean were going to win the belts here. I really didn't. I thought it was going to end in some kind of shit show because it felt like that's where they were leading towards, and I felt like a younger team was going to take out Edge and Orton in like an upset. So I never really thought, believe it or not, I know everyone thinks, oh, they need to have the belts and everything, but I never thought they were going to win the belts. I think that's why they kind of turned the corner on the feud into the new year with
so
the beating up of Flair.
Do you think they were going to do a DQ finish here anyway?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I think DX was going to lose by DQ. I think they were going to go. I think they were going to go to that ending anyway. They just may have gone. I don't even know if they went. I don't even know if they ended the match early. I mean, I don't have the page up. And well, let me see what we have it on our board.
It
I think
went,
it's 20.
20 even.
Yeah, 20 even, or it might have even been a little longer. We have. It says 20 even. I think Wiki said like 22:15 or something. In any event, I couldn't see even if he didn't get hurt, I couldn't see
Wiki,
it going much longer.
20.
Yeah, I don't think it was going to go much longer than that.
Wiki.
I don't think it was going much longer than that anyway. So I have a feeling that the match was going to end this way anyway. Now, I do think they definitely called an audible, and kudos to Sean. Edge and Orton. I mean, Edge kind of was hurt, so he at the time he was, you know, he was in peril. But Orton definitely looked like he was just staring at Hunter, who was all crumpled on the ground. I think he was definitely deer in headlights. So good job by Sean to kind of keep it going and move it along. But making it a title match really didn't do anything. I think it was all about the revenge factor and that kind of thing. So I didn't think they were going to win the belts here. I think this was going to end in a DQ anyway. Step two, I think these guys worked really great together. I mean, Orton and Triple H already do. Sean and Edge kind of had that mini feud almost a year ago into that early 06. But these guys really have worked great together since October.
The Edge might. Wasn't that early 05? 2 years ago.
I thought it was 06. Oh, no, you're right. It was 05 because that's right, because it was before the Rumble.
Yeah.
That's right. So it was 2 years ago. I think they worked great together. I thought this match was going to be a little too much over the top, but it really wasn't. And step three, like we talked about, Triple H getting hurt forced it to be inaudible. But, I mean, at 23:20, I really couldn't see this match going that much longer. So I don't even think they went early. I think they maybe kind of slowed it up a bit and kind of let Triple H kind of try and get under his knee and come to some sort of conclusion. But I couldn't – I mean, 23 minutes. I mean, how much more was the match going to go? So rated RKO retain their World Tag Team Championships. And I don't think the match earlier in the night with a babyface team winning had anything to do with it either. Because I think by the time Crime Time gets his title shot, who knows who the champions were going to be. They may not have them until, you know, June. So I don't think that even mattered either way.
Yeah, but I agree. It's definitely definitely a good match. I have good chemistry. And I love that. It just eats up time for these guys. Gets them out of the title picture. Let's, you know, do other things for a bit. And, just you know, it's kept them busy since, like, October. So it's been good to keep these four guys. And it's helped Orton a lot, I think, post, you know, the Taker stuff and then the injury and whatnot. So
right, exactly. So,
and they get smacked by Angle and everything else. So it's been a good bounce back for him.
No, it definitely has. And you know, good things will be on the horizon for him in 2007. But rated RKO, retain the championships, and Triple H is gone for the first time.
Gone so long.
Could you imagine Vince like coming up with a tag team? Guys, I got a great Nick team name for you. Chilliwack. Be perfect. Here's a Big Show and Billy Gunn should have been called instead of Double Crap on a Stick. Double Chilliwack on a Stick. All right. Why don't we take a break? We have two matches left, including our main event for the WWE Championship. I wouldn't say it's a terrible show so far. I'd say it's pretty good so far, no?
Yeah, it's been fine.
I'm pretty good.
No complaints on this side.
Nope, curious to see where we rank it on the report card, but that'll come later. But two matches left, including our main event for the WWE Championship. But first, 2007's words of wisdom throbbing.
I would have said you're a chili whack, Griscolo.
Because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation is JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Friscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners, as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at New Year's Revolution 2007. Of course, Steve Riddle did his digital previewing earlier today. Looked at that Ric Flair versus Kenny Dykstra match. You can check out his piece. Joe Barnhart had his PTB end of season power rankings for MLB. Of course, the playoffs kick off tomorrow, and your boys play Wednesday?
Yes, Wednesday evening, 8:08. Thor and Bumgarner.
You get to deal with the awesome CB Bucknor, so enjoy that. New Between the Sheets, episode 63, Chris and Bix with John McAdam, looking at this week back in 1985. New episode of Lucha Afterground, reviewing episode 4 of season 3. A new episode of Survey Says, our buddies Tim and Andy back at there looking at the history of Starcade. So I love that episode. I call it Beautifully Innocent. That's what it is to me. It's a great show. It's a light listen. It's an easy listen, but it's really funny. Guys have bring a lot of laughs and a lot of insight. So it's a cool show. Nice companion to Where the Big Boys Play. And two companions that we love as well, Greg and Nick, with the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast, number 23 and 24, a huge comics draft and pitches. They had the crew in, and of course, they went through their draft. So the whole comic staff took part of that. Well worth a listen for you comics fans. Our excellent network adventure continued, looking at TNT from 1/17/85 as we chug along. The match of the week, Club Scott, looked at Naito versus Michael Elgin from New Japan, 9/25/16. And this is a really cool interactive piece. If you haven't read it yet, go check it out. You can, basically what we do is we have a group of staff members are watching. The tram is now stopping it.
It does.
Please step back from the doors as the tram opens on the left.
Closing
side.
Doors, please. Yes.
So anyway, interactive piece. We have staff members that watch these matches from around the world this week. We pick one match. It's kind of like a book club. And Chad is like our Oprah. He picks the match. Everyone watches and shares their thoughts. And then what we're doing is asking you to provide your feedback, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, Pro Wrestling Only. Give us that feedback, and then Chad will include it in the column along with the other staff members that are giving their thoughts on the match. So we'll run it for the next week. So we'll say, here are our readers' thoughts on last week's before they get to the next week. So, again, interactive stuff. It's really cool if you're looking to expand your horizons. They're going to be looking at stuff unconventional from around the wrestling world. Be sure to also check out our NFL Huddle, PTBN style, where we have about 7 or 8 of us in a group chat throughout the week talking NFL, and then we publish it every Thursday. Check that out as well as, Scott, you and Logan Crossland's hot takes for the world of college football. Same idea there. And, of course, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continues as well. We're up to the end of September 1993 in the world of Raw. And be sure to check out our ebooks as well. They're completely free. You can just click the ebooks banner on the right-hand side. It'll take you right there, and you can be living large. What are you giggling about? What are you guffawing about now?
I'm guffawing because you're mentioning September 93, and I'm like, do we ever want to watch the first 9 months of Raw ever again? It's like almost – if I have to listen to Rob Bartlett's voice ever again, I think I may want to jump off my fire escape. No longer. No longer. But definitely, please read the refreshes. They're a lot of fun. We enjoy doing them. We're loving going back through time now, filling the gaps of the early – of those mid-90s pay-per-views. So having a good time with it, as well as the Network Adventure. Having a great blast with that as well. Before you – are you finished? I don't even want to.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we're done. Follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, all that shit.
I want to quickly, and I do this as well when he's on Main Event, but love Between the Sheets, and I'm listening to the back catalog. I don't know if you listened to this one, JR, because I know you were listening to the back ones as well. Chris and Bix did an episode where they had no guest. I think their guest had to bail at the last minute or something. It was the last week of January into February of 1991. I think it was like episode 28, maybe.
If you haven't listened to it yet,
it's fantastic. They go really in deep into the whole thing with WrestleMania 7 and the LA Coliseum and the sports arena and Slaughter. And the whole thing with – if you read J.J. Dillon's book, anybody who read it, I highly recommend it. He talks about the whole – you know, him and Meltzer kind of had this backdoor, you know, like deep throat kind of conversations about the – you know, he would feed Meltzer stuff. Vince wanted him – and the whole thing is about WrestleMania 7 and the war and all this. It's a tremendous listen. So,
The Great War?
The Great War. Yeah, Between the Sheets, tremendous show. Bix and Zellner and Chris and the new episode hit the website today. But if you listen to the back catalog, tremendous stuff. This is episode, I think it's 28. It's the last weekend of January in 1991. So I just wanted to pump that up.
And, of course, don't forget to use our dedicated Amazon link as well, PlayStation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon to do all your shopping, so do that too.
Woohoo! Yes. Not a bad match on Raw right now. New Day against Jericho. Pretty good match so far. By the way, on a side note, JR, when was the last time a secondary title was defended in a cell?
Interesting. I don't know.
Because it was just announced, of course, that Roman Reigns will be defending the United States title against Rusev at Hell in a Cell on the 30th in Boston. We're actually missing a Boston pay-per-view. Bummer.
Yeah, but we're going to be heading to a West Warwick pay-per-view the night before Hell in a Cell. Is the XWA with Zack Sabre Jr. We have a crew going.
Oh, nice.
October 29th. So if you're in the area, New England, and you want to go see Mr. Sabre, let us know. We're going to be buying tickets this week.
Is it the musical theater? With Doink and Marty Jannetty?
No, it's at the Factory of Fear or whatever. So it's like, I've never seen the place, but it's like it's right near. It's like 10 minutes from my house, so we'll be doing Boneheads first. And I think Mr. D'Amato taking the ride in. So.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Okay, so let us move on. Let's get back to Kansas City. Kansas City. Here, well, at least I don't have to see them, but we do have the Giants. Oh, and are we all rooting for the Orioles? Because I'm just Blue Jade out. I'm done with them. Done with their
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of done with all of them, but.
Roided up bullshit. I'm done with the Blue Jays. Anyway, they play Tuesday, and of course, Mets Giants on Wednesday. All right, let's get back to Kansas City and our kind of crowd tempered match before we get to the main event. JR, and a year ago, these two were plotting to take out John Cena inside the chamber, and now hated enemies. How did we get here?
Hated frenemies. On 11/27, Carlito came down to the ring and cost Chris Masters a match against Jerry Lawler. During this time, Torrey Wilson had began accompanying Carlito to the ring. It was revealed that they were a couple. 2 weeks later, Carlito teamed with Lawler to defeat Masters and Viscera. Later that night, after Torrey lost a match to Victoria, Masters showed up and put her in the master lock until Carlito made the save. On 12/18, Masters and Carlito squared off, but the match quickly fell apart and they brawled into the crowd. Masters grabbed a video camera and bashed Carlito in the head with it, splitting him open. 2 weeks later, Masters teamed with Kenny Dykstra to beat Carlito and Flair. Mm-hmm. Carlito paired with Torrey now as his chicken valet. Old feud reignited. Masters suddenly heated back up. He was so good a year ago and then just vanished and now brought back into relevance, at least, thankfully. Pretty basic back and forth to open up with Carlito getting a face buster for a pin cover. Masters comes back with a high back body drop. Masters attacks the ribs and back, but Carlito avoids a back suplex and lands a drop kick after they deserve trade blows. Carlito hits a great springboard moonsault for two. Carlito wriggles out of the master lock and tries one of his own, but Masters breaks it and hits a back suplex with one arm. Masters uses his power to keep Carlito grounded, picking up near falls while shit-talking his old friend. Carlito comes back with a knee lift and tries for a front victory roll, but Masters drops down and hooks the tights to steal the win. After the bell, Masters kicks him in the head and grabs the master lock. I was a perfectly fine match, but the crowd is just so burnt out after the DX stuff that no one was into it. Both guys worked hard. Carlito's renaissance continues. I think it's really cool that Masters got the win because he deserved a lot better than he got at the end of 2006. But were you surprised that they had him beat Carlito here?
Absolutely. You and I had said that Masters should have been the babyface because usually, you know, when you have like the Ren and Stimpy combo of, you know, smart small guy, big dopey big guy, usually the big guy is the one taken advantage of and is the babyface. So it was kind of unusual that Masters was the heel because, you know, he doesn't come – at least he comes off more of as a bully instead of trying to be cerebral because right. He really shouldn't. But, yeah, I was stunned that he lost, that Carlito lost. I actually was. You think he was being punished for something? I don't think so.
No, I think it was just
it was weird.
Yeah. No, I think it's just a feud. I mean, it is weird that Masters has been so neutered for most of 06 and now suddenly he's back. But, he was great. I mean, he was great when they were using him. And like we had talked about before at the time, would it have made more sense for Masters to be the face and Carlito the heel? But.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Vince McMahon would have
and that's pretty much how exciting the match was.
Been a long week. But he, Masters, again, I thought deserved better. And Carlito, while I thought he should have stayed a heel back in April, he's kind of proved everyone wrong. Like, I think he had a really good face run here in 06 into early 07. He's worked his ass off, delivered a lot of good pay-per-view matches. He still looked like that potential breakout star.
Yeah, he definitely did. I'm just still perplexed that Masters won the match. But step one, it's amazing how things, again, change with these guys from 1 year earlier, as I mentioned in the prelude here. A year ago at this pay-per-view, they were plotting.
Preludes to the steps now? This is never going to end.
What?
So we got preludes to the steps and then
preludes to the
landings
steps, yes.
And epilogues and everything else?
Yeah, exactly. Epilogues and steps, landings and plateaus and.
Knots landing.
Uncle to Uncle Tug.
He does.
But it's amazing how these. Son of a bitch. Master the martial arts. Step two. JR, not you, the other one, throws a dig about Masters when he's trying to jaw jack with Carlito. He goes, did you catch JR? He goes, I can't believe this guy's trying to put two words together. so bad. Almost like they're saying, why is this guy supposed to be the you know, the cerebral heel instead of the dopey baby face? Like, this is so ridiculous. And step three. Again, I wonder where they were going with this. If they took the time to keep Masters heel and win this match, I don't know if the feud was supposed to continue or was this – again, I don't know. Was it supposed to be a punishment for Carlito or is this just a step in the feud and they're going to wrestle on Raw or something? I was a little confused by that. But Chris Masters gets the win, a decent sprint, you know, quick sprint. What was it, like 6 minutes, I think? Nothing crazy. But I was a little confused that that Masters actually won the match. I was surprised at that, particularly since he had actually put Torrey in the master lock that week or that Monday, or maybe it was the Monday before. Okay, time now for our main event. The WWE Championship on the line, your champion still from Unforgiven, Mr. John Cena, and a new fresh challenger in our midst, JR.
On 11/27, Armando Estrada officially challenged John Cena to a WWE title match on behalf of Umaga. Cena accepted the challenge and wanted to fight Umaga, but Armando forced Umaga to walk away. The next week, Umaga assaulted Cena after a match with Chris Masters. On 12/11, Cena defeated Estrada in a match, but was attacked by Johnny Nitro after the bell. The next week, Umaga teamed up with Rated RKO to battle Cena and DX in a no contest. During the match, Cena and Umaga brawled up the ramp, where Cena threw Umaga through the staging glass. Umaga shook it off, got up, and the brawl continued. And then on 1-1, Umaga struck again, costing John Cena a match against, yes, the one and only Kevin Federline. Later in that night, Cena was forced to wrestle Umaga, Armando, Nitro, and Coach, and the match ended quickly when Cena grabbed the chair and bashed Umaga with it. The return of KFED was so great because they paid off the Cyber Sunday attack. They really built up and hyped up their big New Year's Day match, and then KFED gets the win. Tremendous stuff. I was so excited for that match on Raw. One of my favorite Raw moments, KFED versus Cena. Umaga's rise up the ladder finally complete as he has arrived in the main event. This was set up and teased nicely at Survivor Series and built from there. Umaga's build-up has been nearly flawless. He's looked unstoppable. He's remained undefeated during his ascent. And he's a good feud for Cena as a character, too, where he's a pure heel. Cena tries to stick and move early as Umaga wildly chases and then flips out outside while regrouping. Umaga runs his shoulder into Cena's gut and then flicks him over the top rope to the floor. Umaga slings Cena into the stairs and mows him down with a clothesline back inside. Cena makes a brief comeback, but Umaga hits a Samoan drop. Back outside, Umaga runs Cena into the table, but back inside, he whiffs on a sit-down splash to block a sunset flip. Cena tries to slam Umaga, but he collapses, and Umaga gets a two. Umaga drops a leg and then catches Cena, coming off the top rope, and hits a spinning side slam. Umaga's just manhandling Cena, cutting off all of his offense. Cena gets a desperation DDT, but Umaga no-sells it and hits a running spin wheel kick in a great spot. Cena makes a comeback again by catching Umaga with his knees and hoists him up for the FU, but he collapses, too worn out. Umaga pitches Cena to the floor and then drags him right back in and punches and stomps away. Umaga grabs a nerve hold, and when Cena breaks free, Umaga drops him with another hard blow. Cena avoids a Samoan spike off the top rope, and then the two trade hands. Cena lays in two clotheslines, but Umaga slugs him in the ribs, and on the third one, Umaga misses a charge, and Cena slings him into the ring post and hits a spinning side slam and five-knuckle shuffle. Umaga blocks the FU with a belly-to-belly and hangs Cena in the tree of woe and pelts him with a running headbutt. Cena gets his boots up on a charge and rolls Umaga up with a flash pin. I thought this was a frustrating finish, but it's a really damn good match. It's explainable to be fluky that he catches Umaga with one hard shot, but I actually think they should have done a fuck finish here to set up the rematch. I don't think Umaga should have taken his first loss like this. I think they should have done a DQ or a countout, or maybe Umaga wins by countout or something different, and not have him get pinned yet. Umaga dominated the whole match. He cut off Cena at every turn. Cena never hit any of his big moves, and I thought it was really well worked and structured. I think it's a hidden gem of a match. Everyone, of course, knows the next one, and we'll talk about that, but I thought this one is way overlooked, and I thought Umaga looked awesome. I thought Cena sold well, and Cena escapes, but Umaga, even in that loss, the one thing is the way they had him lose, he looked unbeatable still. And normally, you know, the bitch with the Cena slash Hogan style match is they shrug off all of the offense and then, like, hit their quick flurry of moves and get the win. Cena didn't do that here. He just happens to catch Umaga with a blow that it's enough to keep him down for three. Like, I thought at least that was well done. But I really, really like this match.
I thought this match was very good. I think it's a sleeper from what we will see in 3 weeks.
Yeah. I did not remember it being this good at all.
No, I don't either. I'll get to the finish in a minute because you almost took my thought out because I was going to debate you a little bit on it about Umaga losing, but you kind of backed yourself up on it. Step one, I like how for once we can have a simple challenge. Estrada comes out, says, I want my Umaga to face you for the title. And Cena says, okay, and that's it. You know, what happened to those days we can just challenge guys for belts and then let the feud build instead of having to do something like intricate and kooky and then have bring the title into the mix? What's wrong with a good heel just challenging a babyface or vice versa for a title? Very nice and simple. And then you build from there. So I was very happy that we were able to. And for Cena, and it works particularly for a guy like Cena because, you know, everybody wants to face him and everybody thinks they could beat him at the time. So I think it makes a lot of sense. So I was really fine with them just having somebody challenge him for a belt, period, for the title. So I had no problem with that. I thought that was great. Simple, to the point, old school. Step two. As I said in the opener, JR, about Jeff Hardy, even now, and Cena's only been technically with the company, what, 3.5 years? Well, been with on the main roster for 3.5 years. But just like Jeff Hardy, do you already feel like, after being champion for really a year and a half, year and three quarters, he already feels like a veteran? Cena already feels like a guy who's already an established, kind of hardened
Yeah,
main
well, I mean,
event
he's
champion.
Been,
you
yeah,
know?
I mean, he's been champion and in the main events for like 3 years now. So
yeah, so
or 2 years.
But he finally exactly. But he feels like a guy like not just oh the current you know big star, but a guy who's been around longer than he actually has been. You know, and you know what it is. Because he's been facing guys that are obviously more established than him, Jericho and JBL and Kurt and, you know, maybe Edge is the only one that's – but even Edge, Edge has been around since 98. Maybe he's not been a main eventer that whole time, but he's been with the company since 98. This is the first time that Cena's facing a guy that's either equal to him in terms of longevity or experience or lesser than him. And that's a big deal, I think, for Cena. To finally seem like the established guy, you know? So I like that. I like that. And step three, like I said, I was going to debate you on it because I had no problem with Umaga losing here, but you pretty much said it in the back end of your comment that he did kind of win, I don't want to say cheap, although you could really say, yeah, it was a cheap win. You know, Cena kind of got a, you know, got Umaga dazed and then rolled him up. If anything, you know what I thought would have been cool? Is if he, like, pulled the tights or something. Or I mean, I know that would have made it look stupid. But the fact that Cena had to steal just 3 seconds of the match
right.
to win, considering the rest of the – however long the match was it, like, 12 minutes?
Yeah, they definitely made it like he just barely escaped. I mean, they did a good job protecting Umaga. If Umaga had already had a loss, this would have felt a little better to me. The fact that he had never lost, I don't know. I guess maybe it works. It keeps him strong. I just felt like the loss had to be a bigger deal. I really think a DQ finish would have been okay here.
I agree with you. I agree with you. However, at least if you're going to have Umaga lose and you want to keep Cena moderately
yeah,
strong,
right.
you do a dopey, cheapo finish. And it's okay. It doesn't make Cena look bad. He did the right thing. It's not like he cheated. Like I said, he didn't pull the tights, you know, foot on the ropes or something silly. But yeah, I could see Umaga, you know, spearing him into the barricade and they're just lying there for 10 seconds or whatever. I mean, unfortunately, JR, we're going to see that finish in about 3 months or four and yeah, about 3 months. So I don't think we'd want to see it twice in 4 months because we're going to see that finish at Backlash, but it's okay. I'm all right with it. It yeah, he's not undefeated, but at the same time, he wasn't definitively pinned, and that will lead us to what we see in San Antone in 3 weeks. So, all right. So John Cena retains his WWE Championship, continues his reign in a match that was really good, much better than I think anybody thought because you know the rematch is that much better. But this was definitely a great you know a great precursor and certainly one of John Cena's kind of forgotten title matches.
Very forgotten. I mean, like I said, going into it, I just remember it being like short and then Cena wins. I was way off in my memory of it. Definitely a good hidden gem. It's going to crack this list, I think, that we're about to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So there is our pay-per-view. There is
Sneaky
New
good
Year's
show.
Revolution.
And there was really nothing bad. I mean, even the women's match was like, okay. I mean, it was I enjoyed it overall. I thought it was a pretty easy watch. The tag match was a little long and you know, but at least World's Greatest was in there quite a bit, and they were pretty good. But between the cage match, the DX tag, and the main event, like that's three really strong matches to carry the show. So I thought this was a really good show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. All right, so let's go to the report card. We'll start right down the middle, and you tell me better or worse, and we'll discuss it. Is it better or worse than Armageddon?
Hmm. Yeah.
Is it better than No Mercy?
Yeah.
I don't think it's better than SummerSlam.
No, but it's not far behind.
All right, so would you put it between SummerSlam and No Mercy?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have it fifth. Okay. All right, no match here is under worst. Okay. You talked about you think this main event belongs, at least in our discussion of best match and of our list here.
Right, I think the DX match comes up a little short, and Nitro Hardy was good, but not on this list.
Okay.
Cena Umaga was, to me, like yeah, I would put around 4-ish stars.
Okay, so is it better than Foley Flair, I Quit?
Maybe.
Okay. Is it better than the ladder match from Armageddon?
Yes.
Okay. Better than Benoit Finley from Judgment Day.
I feel like I'm at the eye doctor, number one or number two.
What it R T?
Better than what?
Benoit Finley from Judgment Day.
What number? Where do we have that on the list? Benoit Finley.
That's fourth. Right now it's fourth.
Yeah, I don't think it's better than that.
All right, so we'll put it fifth. Because above that, well, we'll go through the list now. All right, see, let me just type it real quick. So, all right, and obviously we've got the rematch coming up, and that's going to be a very difficult discussion when we get to that match next week. So, okay, here is our up-to-date report card with JR. We only got three shows left. Three shows left on the report card. So 13 shows in.
Thank God.
Here is our pay-per-view rank.
It's getting harder to rank them because this is harder to remember.
I know, I know. 13-1, Vengeance. Oh, that show sucked. As we're putting more shows in, I'm like, wow, that show. No, I don't think these last three are going to be as bad as that was. Cyber Sunday, December to Dismember, Survivor Series, Backlash, Great American Bash, Armageddon, No Mercy, New Year's Revolution, SummerSlam, Judgment Day, Unforgiven, and number one still, One Night Stand. Our four worst matches, four, Braun Panties, three, Lita vs. Mickey James from Cyber Sunday, the Braun Panties from Great American Bash. Two, Kane vs. Kane from Vengeance, and the worst match, Kane vs. Big Show from Backlash. All right, and now best match. Right now we have 12 matches. London and Kendrick vs. the Pitbulls. This is from 12 to the top. London and Kendrick vs. the Pitbulls from Great American Bash. DX vs. the McMahons vs. Big Show from Unforgiven, Hell in a Cell. Triple H vs. Edge vs. Cena from Backlash. Regal vs. Chris Benoit from No Mercy. Edge vs. Cena from SummerSlam. Foley vs. Flair, the I Quit from SummerSlam. London and Kendrick vs. the Hardys vs. Regal and Taylor vs. Eminem from Armageddon, the ladder match where Mercury lost his face. Number 5, Cena vs. Umaga from New Year's Revolution. 4, Benoit vs. Finley from Judgment Day. 3, Edge, Foley, Lita vs. Dreamer, Funk, Beulah from One Night Stand. 2, Cena vs. RVD from One Night Stand. And still at number 1, although could have a contender in the next show, Cena vs. Edge from Unforgiven, the TLC.
This is going to get really tough. I mean, there's at least just off the top of my head, three matches that are going to get into this top five discussion over the next few weeks.
I know. I think so. I agree. I think that's what makes this so much fun. Pay-per-views. Right now, off the top of my head with three left, I don't know if any of them will beat One Night Stand.
I don't know.
Maybe the last one.
No.
Maybe the last one.
Maybe our next one.
You think so? Mm. All right. Well, we'll get there next Monday night. But right now, One Night Stand, still the best pay-per-view of the creative year, 06 and 07. But we are done. That is New Year's Revolution. Once again, another one of those shows. If you're on the network and you're not sure what you want to watch, you want to find something random, throw this on. Not bad. You'll be pleasantly surprised.
There you go. All right. So we will be back next Monday with Royal Rumble 2007. Mark Clair back in the house.
We'll be
joining us to talk about that show. And then we get a little spotty from there, Scott, as we usually do in the fall.
Yep.
Various traveling and engagements. We'll be off for a couple weeks, back with our Halloween special as usual. And then November will be a little up and down as well. But just stay with us here on the Place to Be Nation Network. There's plenty of podcasts to keep you moving with us being off, of course. There's tons of new and old. Check them all out. You got Main Event this week. What's going on there?
Yes. There is a schedule change, though. We are moving our recording of Main Event from Wednesday night to Thursday night, so I can watch the Amazons and the Giants. So instead of it being posted on Thursday morning, it'll be up Thursday evening when we're finished. And I wanted to, because I wasn't sure what was going on with TNA and what they were doing this weekend, three quarters of the core four will be making its return. Steve Willey from your exceptional show, Clotheslines and Headlines, will join us, as well as Mr. Reish, who hasn't been on in God knows how long. Mm. And the host of Rank and File, the ubiquitous Jordan Duncan, will be joining us this week for Main Event. We'll preview No Mercy. And we'll talk about this whole Bound for Glory TNA, you know, debacle and the various rumors that are swirling in people's minds and taking over their lives, apparently, in some cases. So we'll talk about that this week, but that'll be up Thursday evening.
All right, speaking of clotheslines and headlines, check out last week's episode. I was off.
Great show.
But Mr. Willie, Mr. Nate Milton, and Glenn Butler stepped in for me, and they had Kevin Kelly on. They previewed Ring of Honor's big pay-per-view. But that interview is still worth listening to because he talks about a lot more than just that pay-per-view that occurred last Friday.
And tons of other talk as well. And we'll be back next week with that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, remember, every Thursday, Parv and a chap called Alan bringing letters from kayfabe at you. Mm-hmm. So be sure to check that out. It is a super fun and very quick listen. Well worth your 45 minutes or so. If you love 80s and early 90s WWF, that is the show. And if you love British accents, that is a show for you. So check that out, as well as the new Survey Says, like I mentioned before. A very fun show looking at WCW. So tons to enjoy for you on the Place to Be Network. Subscribe to all of our iTunes feeds, the Place to Be podcast feed, PWO, PTBN, and PTBN Pop. And follow us on... I feel like Brad named it Pop, just like a tribute to him popping his peas. Like,
I suppose thinking the same thing, actually.
I think that's why he did it. So
yeah, I think definitely is why he did it.
But anyway, there you go. So we'll be back next week, Royal Rumble. For now, we're in the books. And Scott has a friend to go nurse back to good things. So we'll be back.
Puffy tendons. Really? Ice chips? Some girl I've never seen in my life. That was all right because the lady was chill. Then we dipped to the theater set to Ill. We saw Elm Street and man, it was death. And everything seemed all right when we left. But when I got home and laid down to sleep, that began the nightmare. But on my street... in my room like an oven. My bed soaked with sweat and man, I was bugging. I checked the clock and it stopped at 12:30. It had melted, it was so darn hot and I was thirsty. I went downstairs to grab some juice or a coke, flipped the TV off and then I almost choked when I heard this awful voice coming from behind. It said, man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. Broke outside in my drawers and screamed so long cause got halfway up the block. I calmed down and stopped screaming, then thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. I figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad Fresh Prince, but Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said, here's what we'll do. We got a lot of work here, me and you. The souls of your friends, you and I will claim. I said, yo, Fred, I think you got me all wrong. I ain't partners with nobody with nails that long. Look, I'll be honest, man, this team won't work. The girls won't be on you, Fred, your face is all burnt. I pat him on the shoulder, said, thanks for stopping by. Then I opened up the door and said, take care, guy. He got mad, drew back his arm and slashed my shirt. I laughed at first and thought, hold up, that hurt. It wasn't a dream, man, this guy was for real. I said, Freddy, how's been an awful mistake here? No further words, and then I darted upstairs. Crashed through my door, then jumped on my bed. Pulled the covers up over my head. Said, oh, please do something with Fred. He jumped on my bed, but through the covers with his claws. Tried to get me, but my alarm went off, and then silence. It was a whole new day, I thought. I wasn't scared of him anyway, until I noticed those rips in my sheets, and that was proof that there had been a nightmare on my street. Jeff, answer! Come on, man.
Hello?
Jeff, it's Prince, man. Jeff, wake up. Jeff, wake up.
What do you want?
Jeff, wake up, man. Listen to me, Jeff.
It's 3 o'clock
Jeff,
in the morning.
Listen,
what
Jeff,
do you
would
want?
You listen to me? Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Man.
Jeff, listen to me. So, don't
so
go to sleep, Jeff.
Tomorrow,
Jeff,
I'm going
Jeff.
To bed.
Jeff! 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 Jeff!